Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everybody and welcome to the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, thank you for leaving us reviews on iTunes, massively appreciated. And thank you for giving us all of your support. Me, Tim and Phil will be attending the National, I think the Radio Awards or Audio Awards or something, this week for Best Sports Show alongside BBC Sport and TalkSport. So we'll see how that goes on Thursday. But really, it's all because you guys share the podcast and leave those reviews and just allow us to do what we do down here, which we love doing so much. Today, I am joined by, genuinely, one of my favourite sharks. One of the guys in Sale who will always be the first to come and say hello to you, ask you how you're doing. A genuinely really great bloke and not a bad try scorer either. So, I'm not going to keep you waiting much longer. Here he is. I am here joined live in the dungeon with one of my personal favourite Sale Sharks, Byron McGuigan. How are you, mate?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here.
What do you think of the dungeon then? You're one of the few to actually make it down here.
I was pretty impressed. I didn't expect this when I came in, the collection you got. Very, very nice, very colourful.
Yeah, missing a Namibia shirt and a Scotland shirt.
Well, yeah. Hopefully when I get one of those, I'll drop one off.
which one are you looking for first?
I have to say Scotland.
You do have to say Scotland, don't you? And fingers crossed it'll be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, let's hope so, you know. Got a squad announcement in about a week's time, so hopefully I can squeeze in there.
Are you quietly confident that something might come about?
No, I got that approach where I don't expect anything, so I don't get disappointed, to be honest. So, I'm just going to work hard, and if the opportunity comes, I'll be ready.
You've been playing well, though. I mean, that must kind of play on your mind a little bit after... What have we got now? Four or five tries?
Six.
Six tries. There you go.
In five games.
So you've got to be thinking that. That's like Johnny May numbers.
Yeah, he's also... I think he actually just scored on the weekend, but I wasn't in the Prem. So I think he's sitting on six from six, too.
He might have seven or six from six, but the point is you've got a better ratio.
Yeah, but I think his one was now in the Champions Cup, so it doesn't... It's not the same. That's like maybe a season tally, which is higher than mine, yeah.
What's just occurred this weekend? You weren't playing. Was that just a rotational thing?
I think other boys just needed a bit of game time, a bit of rotation. It's good competition to rotate. And, you know, then Steve can assess over this two-week block what his strongest team could be going into Exeter. So, yeah, I won't be playing, yeah.
Yeah, that's just for the game gone, though. That isn't for this game. Well, the whole European campaign, if you like.
No, you don't know that. You just know when the team's selected. So, obviously, I didn't play last weekend. Whether I'm playing this week or not, we'll know tomorrow.
Was there any part of you that was disappointed to miss a game with a team which is as large as Toulouse? Or when you're a professional, do you just kind of get on with it and accept, you know, it's rotation and you've been rotated for the right reasons?
Yeah, I think obviously disappointed because... as a rugby player, you want to be playing rugby, but at the same time, it's a long season, and that's why you got a squad with depth, because you need to rotate to have that competition.
Yeah.
To feel fresh, especially for the big games. Well, there's no easy games really, but just to rotate so that when the big games come, you have people to call on. So.
Yeah, that's a great situation for Sale to be in, and one they haven't been in for quite some time.
Yes, absolutely. It's still a relatively small squad, but the quality we have in the small squad is actually quite impressive. So, yeah, not too bad. Just need a couple of these results to come our way now.
You've got a pretty rich rugby history. You've been pretty much everywhere. You played, what, England, New Zealand, South Africa?
Scotland.
Scotland, of course.
Yeah.
So, when you see a team like Toulouse, what are your thoughts on these big French teams and how they play?
To be honest, it's different now to what it was when I was... maybe 21, 22, you know. when I came across it, Toulon and Cast and all these big name players, I was quite in awe, because where I came from in South Africa, I was actually one of two. There's a guy called Damien Dielender.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, both of us are the only two from our school that's made it professional.
Is that right?
So not many people have the privilege to from our school to go and make it further.
Mm.
So I was a bit, what do you call it, stage fright, really.
Yeah.
But now I've played against so many good players, and I feel like over the years I've still developed. So when I play against these teams, I'm not really spooked anymore, or I don't really get that stage fright. I just get excited and want to get the win, really, against these teams.
What do you think about the way the French teams play then? Do you like the philosophy behind it, or do you prefer the Premiership or the Pro 14 style?
Definitely the Pro 14 and the English style. I like a structured game. I don't like individuals, too many individuals in the team, because sometimes that can be a bit poisonous, in my opinion. If I was a coach, I wouldn't want that. I'd want to have a structure in place that I can look back on when things don't go well. I can at least look and be like, okay, this is what went wrong.
That's really interesting. We were talking about this yesterday on Egg Chasers, and the point we made, or the point I made at least, is that if you have a player that's too talented, like just too skillful or has too much flair, it can actually damage the team, because you don't know how to plan around that individual.
Yeah, but at the same time, if he's coachable, he'll be able to fit into your game plan.
Yeah.
So if he can fit into your game plan, as well as be skillful and have that moment of brilliance, then it's actually a huge benefit. But when you have maybe like five or six of these talented players trying to outdo each other all the time and not sticking to a team structure, I think sometimes that can be a little bit poisonous.
You mean almost like you've got to have only a few of them rather than a whole team?
Yeah, I think sometimes that's what you find in the French teams. You've got maybe five or six stars in a team, and then there's just too much offloading and drop balls and chip kicks, and you know, where sometimes you just need to go through your pattern, your structure that you coached, and then that's how you break down defences, that's how you get your overlaps and score tries.
Do you think then there's any validity in the criticism people, well, specifically they used to do it anyway, is talk about how the Northern Hemisphere has too much structure and is a bit too much rugby by numbers, so we don't have as skillful of players?
No, I don't think so. I think the All Blacks also have a game plan. They're the greatest team in the world, but at the same time, they play what they see. So there's a space, or wherever the space is, they try and get the ball there, you know, and then they manipulate that space, probably the best in the world at the moment. But for me, I think a smart rugby player goes a long way. Someone who can outsmart another team, one team that can outsmart another team, and sticks to the patterns. But at the same time, if there is an opportunity to maybe run it from your 22, do that. Don't have to just kick it. You have to be smart. It's a bit of balance.
Yeah, now, you're a man that actually doesn't just say this. You do get a chance to implement it. So these are sort of things that you're telling the boys at Sandbach?
I try to, yeah.
Go on.
A lot of them, obviously, amateur, they come. Sometimes they can't make training, so it's hard to coach. But at the same time, mine and Rob Webber's big deal this year that we're trying to make is just make them all better rugby players and smarter rugby players. So that's the first process. They're beginning to understand the structure now. So slowly we're going to build it. It's a process. It won't happen overnight, but that's the bigger picture.
How do you enjoy coaching?
Love it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Because you were, am I right in thinking you were looking at going down the ref route for a little while as well? Are you still thinking of that?
I just want to stay in rugby. So whether it's refereeing, which I want to still pursue, the coaching.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try and stay in the game any way I can, really. I just can't really picture myself in an office.
So tell me, how do you go about making a group of amateur players better using your professional experience?
Just making them like understand certain areas of the pitch, what kind of thoughts should be going through your head, you know? Especially there, you know, you could bring a lot of line speed, which causes a lot of pressure on teams where the skills probably won't be as high, so you'll force knock-ons.
Yeah.
Numbers on the feet, so you have a bigger spacing across the field defensively. And just when to kick, when to run certain plays and how to manipulate, finding mismatches. Just trying to make them think all the time is probably the biggest one for now.
And do you find it hard? I mean, this is just my personal experience, but the biggest thing I find with amateur players is they don't talk.
Yeah, we have a few boys that don't mind talking, but I think that's the problem. Sometimes even in a professional team, some people just don't have the confidence to talk.
Yeah.
But we really try and encourage it, and the way we've detailed a lot of our defence and our attack work forces them to talk, because we can hold them accountable if they don't stick to it, because there's a pattern or a certain way things need to be done. So if it's not, we look back at the video. If they're not, if it's not done, we can ask questions.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. You just try and help them along.
Interesting you mention that, because I think the whole point of talking really is actually the accountability. So if you say you're going to get that guy, go get that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you miss that tackle, you're not going to get shouted at, really.
Mm.
It's obviously disappointing. It's still amateur level. But at the same time, at least we know the chat's there.
Yeah.
Execution can come. We can work.
Oh, yeah. And at least you know what decision they've made rather than not knowing anything at all.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, you're with Webbs, aren't you, as a coach? He does, I assume, forwards and stuff. What's he like as a coach? How are you two getting on?
Yeah, well, jokingly around the club, we say he's the Hitler and I'm the soft one.
Yeah.
But I have my moments. I think he's coached before, so he does a lot of the talking, team talks, gets him motivated. And myself, I like to just try and be a little calmer and give some detail. I mainly take the defence. He takes the attack.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you obviously split it between backs and forwards as well, yeah?
Yes. So I'll take the back strikes and then I'll do the team defence. He'll do like the ruck defence with the forwards and lineouts. Mm. And then just do the team attack. But we kind of bounce off each other. He'll give his input, I'll give my input, both on attack and defence.
And do you think you share the same sort of philosophy as to how he wants to play your rugby?
Yeah, he's quite easy, I'm quite easy. So whatever ideas he has, we'll have a chat about it, probably agree on it. And the same with myself. Quite often, we're actually using a lot of sales plays and patterns down at Sandbach. Just so we don't get confused with too many different calls.
Yes, that is a good point.
So it's easy enough.
Yeah, you said you were taking stuff from Sale. Are you taking much inspiration from Paul Deacon? Because every time I get on Sale, I always enjoy watching him teach the details of the lines of running and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, like I said, we do use a lot of the Sale stuff. So, I think that speaks for itself. You know, if you can run those patterns well, you find yourself in a lot of space and potentially try scoring opportunities. It's just at this level, you just really got to make sure you hold on the ball and not get too carried away.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't like to drop the ball over the try line, for instance, would you?
Yeah, absolutely not. You don't want to be doing that. Yeah.
But joking aside, you are top try scorer at Sale, so that must have come up as a bit of banter. Unless maybe it's a bit early for that, to be fair.
No, not really. I think maybe one or two of my mates just have a little comment saying, yeah, you're playing well, and it's obviously good, but at the same time, it's a team effort, really. Mm. Quite a few of those tries have been like Fuff's kick, Ben Curry's crossfield kick.
Yeah.
Two on one.
I was going to say, actually, I can't remember watching a scrum half have such a good short-range kicking game.
It's a great skill that Fuff actually has, you know. Yeah. And his actual vision, his ability to listen on the field last minute when we're calling these plays. Because remember, he's getting calls from 10s, potentially forwards on the other side of the ruck that try scored down the middle.
Mm.
And then I came last minute screaming that the opportunity's over the top. So for him to listen, have a look and pick out the right option it's some talent.
Yeah, it's quite something. I mean, I think we all knew he was going to be good, but I'm actually surprised exactly how good he is.
Well, yeah, I was actually the same as you. I expected him to be good, but I didn't think he'd be as good as he is. So it's really good to play with a guy like that. And he brings energy. He's full of energy.
Yes.
Like his favourite saying is 100%. And that's just how he lives life. Everything's 100%. And I think that's really good, really exciting. Makes for an exciting watch.
You know what? I honestly don't think I've seen a scrum half be able to utilise those short kicks so well. I mean, Danny Kerr did so in the Harlequins game. In fact, probably got the better of Faf, but it's so unusual. He kind of turns his back and then kicks the ball over the top of the ruck.
Yeah, I think Danny must take credit for the try on the weekend too.
Mm.
Myself and a few other options where he's kicked over there, because we actually coach it. Paul Deacon's another one who needs to take a lot of credit for it, because he does his analysis and shows us which teams leave space in the backfield.
Yeah.
When those opportunities present themselves, we then go during the week, we practice it, and then in the game it's up to the wingers to identify the space, like I said.
Is that right?
Yeah. So what we do, we actually train it during the week. Well, Deeks brings it up in a video session. We'll then train it during the week, and then Faf has to make the right decision. So it's a combination of all of them, but you need that their kick is also just as good as the chase.
Mm.
And we would probably still see it in the game, but we needed Deeks to like point it out. So it's a real team effort.
Yeah. So as a winger then, are you trying to patrol almost behind the ruck, waiting for that opportunity?
Yes, when we get told,
mm.
all right, look for these kicks because this is what they're doing in the backfield, then you'll find us sniffing a lot more.
Yeah.
We'll be looking. But at the same time, we also support the space is what the term we use, so we'll stay wide.
Right.
For an attacking kick. And we'll just see, as wingers, we'll see in the backfield where the fullback is, where the wing is, if there's space, if there's only one in the backfield, if there's two, when opportunities arise. Then we feed that message, and that's when we go looking for the ball or fuff, mm. things like that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, the other thing I like, and I think it came from Northampton originally, but is the scrum half moving out one, the winger going into scrum half, and then the scrum half playing it back inside to the winger.
Yeah, I thought that was an excellent play. I didn't even see it myself. And they did it in the game and executed it, you know. And yeah, I think it was an excellent move. Something that should be used a lot more.
Yeah, it's so basic as well. I don't know why it works. It just, for some reason, it does.
Did you watch the Saracens game the weekend?
Yeah, they were magnificent.
Did you see that try they scored at that scrum, right-hand scrum? I think it was Lazowski that scored.
Yes.
That looked like the most simple move. I thought it was probably the most effective. I'm like, damn, I did not think of that.
Well, do you know, if you watch Saracens, everything they do is simple. It's just really good.
I think they just got such good detail in it, and yeah. Everyone just does their roles. Like, there's a load of talent. There's a good example. You were speaking about it earlier, but there's loads of talent in that team, but they play in their structures and their game plan that they're given.
Yeah.
Do their roles, and that's why they're such a great team.
Yeah, because if you watch them, they fundamentally only have one or two patterns maximum. And you know what they are. It's Brad Barrett coming in hard and then maybe something out the back. You know, but it works brilliantly because they all stick to it and the timing's right and they've just done it 1,000 times before. It's like muscle memory.
Yeah, they're so good at just doing... They have one way of playing, they're so good at doing it, and they're like, try and stop this,
mm.
you know? And teams just struggle to do that.
Yeah, I think as well, the simplicity of the system just allows those players to develop a bit more. I mean, I can't think of anything worse than the coach just, you know, overcomplicating things for the sake of it.
For me personally, I just feel like I want to keep learning. I don't feel like I've conquered anything in rugby, like whether it's my counter-attack or kicking or tackling or whatever. I just feel like every day my mindset is when I come in, I just want to keep learning.
Mm.
I'm never too old to learn kind of attitude, and I think that's probably worked pretty well for me in the past and something that I'll probably just keep using.
How much do you pick up from other teams then when you're looking around for these extra details or extra improvements?
To be honest, I watch only New Zealand teams. I don't really watch South Africa much. I just like because they're probably for my position, especially winger.
Yeah,
they probably have the best wingers that's ever come out of the rugby. You know, you got your Joe Rokitoko is probably one of my idols.
I think
he's outstanding. Savivatu was class. And now you got class wingers at Waisaki Noholo. Ben Smith's another one. These guys I love watching because they play in my position. They're probably the best in the world. So I like to just try get ideas off them and try and replicate it.
Yeah, to be fair, they've got a pretty rich history when it comes to wingers. Do you class Rico Ioane in that group?
I do think he's awesome, to be fair, and I think he deserves his shot. And yeah, he's very, very exciting. There's not much I could fault him on. I think he's a very good player. But I have to say my all-time favourite is Joe Rokitoko.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's amazing, you know, that he kind of re-emerged at Racing. I thought he'd retired, and then all of a sudden he's scoring tries in the Heineken Cup again.
I know, he's classed it. I think it was at the same time that you're talking, I was thinking, where's he gone? Then he appeared in a Barbarians game.
Yeah.
And he was unreal.
Yeah, well, do you remember, he was dropped from the Lions. So when the Lions went to New Zealand, he was in his pomp, not this time round. God, that's 12 years ago.
Yeah.
God, yeah. So he was really doing well then. And he was dropped from the New Zealand squad, was sent out to play sevens. So he's been around a long time.
He's been doing very good things for a long time.
Okay, then. So who are the guys that you rate in the Premiership as opposition wingers?
Do you know, Chris Ashton, I thought, was a really good winger. I really liked. He was quite physical, very competitive, always managed to find the line. I thought when he played last year, he was great. Denny's always got a way of finding the line, which is really good. I really rate Jack Noll.
I think
he's
really?
Got, yeah, he's just got a way of beating defenders. He's got really high work rate.
Mm.
Very smart rugby player. James Short.
Yes.
He's a fantastic player. I'm trying to think who else I would say. Anyone you can think?
At the moment, Johnny May. Johnny May has been fantastic.
He is playing very well, to be fair. He's playing...
He's very raw, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you watch him play, he's all about his just breakneck speed. Whereas I think someone like the guys you mentioned, Ashton's all about timing and spotting the opportunity. He's very smart. But Noel, he's a bit different because I think he gets his opportunities through hard work. And if you try enough time, something will eventually happen.
Exactly. This is the thing. I feel like work rate is such a big thing in rugby.
Mm.
If you can support every line break, you're likely to get the last pass. That's the kind of player Jack Noel is.
Yeah.
He supports every break. He's always looking for the ball. The more opportunity he has that ball in his hands, the more opportunity he has to score. There's no point anymore as a winger just standing on your wing, touching the ball five times in the game. Just get your hands on ball. You're meant to be quick. You're meant to be quite agile. Support any breaks. That's what I try and do. But at the same time, you can't be doing that and the ball's going wide and there's no wing there. So it's a bit of balance. And I think Jack Noel's got that spot on.
Going back to James Short, though, I'm always amazed he doesn't get more game time. Every time he plays, he seems to be scoring a hat-trick or at least a brace.
He's fantastic. I think it was my last season exit, I thought, geez, this guy must be knocking on England's door. But I mean, they got Ollie Woodburn. He's fantastic. He's great
good,
under
yeah.
the high ball. You've got Jack Noel, so it's tough. It's funny. I think Ollie Woodburn's another one. I think he should be knocking on England's door somehow.
Yeah, do you know, I think he might have missed his opportunity a little bit because Exeter played, who did they play the other week? And did they lose or didn't do too well? Was it Leicester?
Yes.
I think they lost against Leicester. And I thought it would be a great opportunity for Ollie Woodburn because not only had he been scoring, he'd also been defending really well. And I thought if he could put in a real good performance against Johnny May defensively, that might see him through.
Could have been, yeah. Yeah, Johnny May's playing well. You've got Anthony Watson. You've got Marlon Jard, who's actually in great form at the moment. And Jack Noel, I'm mentioning. So there's quite a few good England wingers at the moment. So, and Eddie Jones seems to have a winning recipe, so you can't question him.
Yeah, that's very true. But, in fairness, the only wingers we are bothered about at the moment are the Scottish wingers.
Yeah, we are.
Now, obviously you don't sound Scottish. So where did you grow up? Was it South Africa or was it Namibia?
I was born in Namibia.
Okay.
But when I was 6 months old, my parents and myself took me to Cape Town. And I was raised in Cape Town until pretty much I left to Glasgow when I was, 21?
Cape Town's a very cool town.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah. So were you involved in like the regional rugby there?
Yeah, so I actually went and played for a team called Border Bulldogs.
Okay.
So there's quite a few of the Sale players that played there. Mike Haley, Sam James, PK James Flynn.
Okay.
Yeah, so I played there, and then I actually played it. This is how my opportunity for rugby actually came about. I played in just like a fun little provincial sevens tournament.
Mm.
From there, I played, which I didn't think I played too great, but I had a couple of good games in the sevens. You know, it's just more of a laugh for me and my mates. And next thing, I got a text saying I'm going to the South African sevens camp.
Mm.
So I made the South African sevens camp, and I was in like the emerging Springbok sevens team.
Yeah,
they played in Dubai. So we played in Dubai, and after that, my agent got hold of someone, or I don't know, but I seen Gregor Townsend afterwards. And Gregor Townsend said, "Oh, Brian Wigan, how are you?" We had a little chat. He said, "Yeah, you're off to Glasgow for medical." So I went and did my medical in at Glasgow over 2-3 days. Went back to South Africa, had that opportunity, went back home, told my mom I'm leaving. You know, because the small provincial team I played for in South Africa, we used to watch Heineken Cup and be like, oh, those teams would beat us by 70 points, 80 points, look how good they are. And I would like sit back and be like, nah. I had that like competitive edge where I was like, no, I want to make that. I reckon we could beat them. So when I had that opportunity to get there, I flipped and went.
Ah.
Yeah.
I've never really thought of it like that. So, back in South Africa, do South Africans look at the Heineken Cup and think, ooh, yeah, that is the premium competition?
There's a difference because you've got your Western Province, Lions, Sharks, Bulls. They will think, oh, yeah, we could play there and beat these teams.
Yeah.
But then you get the Bulldogs, the smaller unions who look at the Bulls, the Stormers, the Cheetahs, the Sharks, and the Heineken Cup and be like, ooh, those teams would smash us.
Yeah.
So you see, it's just different mindsets.
Well, I tell you what, I never really rated the Cheetahs, and they're playing in the Pro 14 now, and they look bloody brilliant.
Yeah, I know. They're doing very well.
Does that surprise you, knowing what you know about South African rugby?
Yeah, because, you know, I thought South African rugby is going downhill a bit, you know, since the Springboks don't play in the Currie Cup. All this chat about there's too much rugby going on. Mm. So they're pulling Springboks from Currie Cup games and the stadiums are becoming empty.
Yeah.
A lot of the best players are leaving. But funny enough, they seem to be getting results in the top 14. Whether I think they could win is a different story. I don't think so. But they seem good enough to cause upset here and there.
Yeah, it strikes me Southern Kings are a complete waste of time. But actually, the Cheetahs might be on something. I think they're beating Leinster at home. They're beating Ospreys at home. They took Glasgow close. They seem like a genuinely good team, but they're only playing in front of four or five people. I mean, there's no crowds there.
I know, yeah.
There's just no one there. And I think that might change if they continue to win.
No.
Why?
I don't know if this African community or Bloemfontein, where the Cheetahs play, I don't know if they really understand the top 14. Because South Africans don't really watch that kind of rugby. It's not really exposed in South Africa on TV. Mm. It's all about Super Rugby, Currie Cup.
It's got to be now. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. If they do continue to win, and they're beating Welsh internationals, Irish internationals, Scottish internationals, I've got to think they're going to turn the corner and the crowds will eventually come, because everyone likes to see a successful team.
I would like to think so, personally. Mm. But I don't see it happening, and not for a very long time. Until you can keep your strongest players in South Africa, none of the fans want to go out and see a second string Cheetahs team play.
Yeah.
Like, no offence, because I think there's a lot of talent there. But at the same time, people want to go and watch the flipping Brian Abanas, who's not playing there anymore.
Yeah.
You know? The Mornay Steyn's not playing, your Francois Hochart, who's not playing.
Do you know what, though? It might be the perfect opportunity for South Africans already in the Celtic League structure to come back home and ply their trade back in South Africa. It could be perfect for that.
I think it's gotten to a stage now where some of these guys have played a long time in South Africa, and the money and the opportunity is better, different experience for them.
Mm.
You know, getting out of South Africa is also quite refreshing for them, you know. It's a lot of, like, instability in South Africa with the crime and corruption. So I think it's also nice for them to just break away from that for a few years. And if they enjoy it, wherever they are, whether it's France, south of France, or Ulster, or Belfast, wherever it is, to then just experience it and make a decision.
Do you fancy heading back to South Africa anytime soon?
If you asked me this about 4 years ago, I would have said yes.
Yeah.
Over the last 4 years, slowly I've been persuaded, and like my head's totally changed, my thoughts have changed, in the sense that I'd probably want to stay, not necessarily in England or Scotland or France, but anywhere outside of South Africa.
Wow. And is that because you've changed, or you think South Africa's changed in those 4 years?
South Africa's changed big time. You know, when I was a kid, I could walk, play in the streets with my friends. You can't do that anymore. You get robbed, and it's just really sad. But at the same time, I had a great childhood, and I haven't had anything bad happen to me in South Africa. But at the same time, when I've got a child now and a family, I don't want to risk it.
Yeah. So I was over there in February, and actually, obviously nothing bad happened, but there was this underlying tension. You always felt that everyone was like, stay safe, and why is everyone telling me to stay safe continually or to watch myself? And it's a little bit unnerving, I guess.
Yeah, if Cape Town had no crime, and I think it would be probably one of the best cities in the world to live. But because of that same feeling you're talking about, that like a little bit of tension, like something could happen, that's the thing.
Mm.
I haven't experienced anything bad, but something could happen. It's like just waiting for something to just kick off, and it can happen at any flipping time, really. And
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tourists don't really see that because it doesn't really happen in a touristy spots because there's a lot of policemen around and so forth. But in the poor communities just outside, it's heaps of drama. I won't get into details, but yeah.
Well, I loved Cape Town because A, you can watch rugby, and B, the fishing is brilliant.
Fishing, do you like fishing?
Yeah. Because it's weird, isn't it? It's like where the two oceans meet.
Yeah.
So on the one side, you've got like cold water, on the other side, you've got the hot water, and you can literally just do whatever you wish.
Yeah, did you go to Cape Point? That's the point, the southernmost point where the two oceans meet.
Is that where the naval base is?
That's Simonstown, nearby.
Yes, I went to Simonstown.
Yes.
And went out from there.
No, it's lovely there.
Oh, it's awesome.
Tell you what, not very smart community. A lot of them go swimming in the mornings and a lot of them get chowed by sharks.
Really?
Yeah.
So the guys were telling me on the boat that on one side of the water, it is... Like, it's one of the worst places in the world for shark attacks.
Yeah.
But literally, you go a mile over land, like, to Llandudno way, and there's not been a shark attack there for, like, 30 years. And they just don't go around the corner for whatever reason.
Seal Island. It's all about Seal Island. Yeah, so there's Seal Island, and that's obviously a big attraction for the sharks.
Oh, if I lived out in Cape Town, I think I'd be going fishing most days. I mean, I go fishing a lot when I go back to Wales, and there's not very many fish in Wales, and I still do it.
Yeah, I'm a big fisherman, too. That's why I asked. I love shark fishing, though. I don't eat fish. So I just fish for the sport.
No. But you just go fishing?
Yeah.
That's mental.
But I fish for shark. I like the adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
And I obviously, I don't do any harm. Say again?
What have you managed to get in the past?
Hammerhead, black tips, ragged tooth. And then just some sand sharks and that. But the main things we go for is like black tip, blue shark.
Awesome.
Hammerheads, yeah. So actually, when I went back now, in the space between 7 a.m. and 12 in the afternoon, we had hooked onto 12 sharks.
Really?
Yeah. And a black tip, as soon as you hook them, they jump out the water. And about 200 meters down the beach is surfers.
Oh,
I
was wow.
Like, I just don't get it. I don't surf because of that, because I fish for sharks. And I know they're right in front.
To be fair, mate, I'm right with you there. It just isn't going to happen.
And it's crazy. But yeah, shark fishing is probably my biggest hobby.
Shame that you're up in Manchester then, isn't it?
Oh, no, there's no sharks, basking sharks in Cornwall, but...
I don't think you're able to catch them, mate. No. I think they're pretty, pretty protected around here.
No, I wouldn't go fishing. I wouldn't try anyway.
Yeah, well, probably wise. Now, we've spoke about where you're from and potential Scotland calls and all the rest of it. Did you ever encounter any parental pressure as to who you should play for or who you should support rugby-wise?
Yeah, growing up, I supported the Springboks. And Scotland, obviously... It was quite interesting when the Springboks played Scotland because I had my mom screaming on the right and my dad screaming on the left, and I was kind of a neutral. But South Africa was pretty much where my love for the game
started.
Who
is the Scottish one? Your mum or your dad?
My mum.
Ah, okay. And your dad is South African. Did he play himself?
No, he didn't. No.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was because he was raised in Namibia, so rugby wasn't that big. He played football.
Mm.
And but in South Africa, it's obviously the biggest sport, especially after the 95 World Cup. So everyone loved rugby.
Yeah.
My dad began to love it. I only started playing rugby late. I was 14, turning 15. So, so I loved rugby through that. I used to watch the Springboks every week. Then when Springboks played Scotland, my mum would come through cheering. My mum is the proudest Scottish woman you'll ever meet.
Is that right? Hang on. But you're a McGuigan. I'm guessing your dad's surname isn't McGuigan.
No, it's Grace.
Ah, but you kept your mum's name.
Yeah, so my mum and dad were engaged, never married, for 23 years.
Got ya.
They just didn't feel the need. And back then, when you were born, you had to keep your mother's surname if you weren't married.
Ah, I see. Just looping back, you go to Glasgow. We've done that bit. How on earth do you end up then going to New Zealand? I mean, that's quite a radical departure. I assume you went to Glasgow because, you know, obviously the Scottish roots, there's a chance to play international rugby. Why head off to New Zealand?
It just excited me, the fact that I could go play in a country where rugby's so rich and they are the best rugby nation in the world. And for me, just to go there and experience it was very exciting and appealing to me. So, when I got the opportunity, I thought I'd definitely take it.
A lot is made a standard of New Zealand players and New Zealand coaches. Does it actually feel like it is that much better when you're out there?
In New Zealand, yeah. Playing? Well, it's a weird one because when I went there, it's just all about high risk, high reward kind of mindset.
Is it?
Yeah, so a lot of the games that I played in the ITM Cup would end up being like 42-38-1. Very high scoring game. They don't really worry about defence that much. You know, they talk about it during the week, but they don't really, as long as you can outscore the opposition. So that was different for me.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it. I still enjoyed it. I've used rugby to really travel the world, and now that I'm slightly older now, I just feel like I'm keen to settle, and I'm glad I experienced that.
So you don't fancy a further stint somewhere else? I mean, obviously there's France to go, but now the American markets are opening up, and you know, maybe even South America.
Yes, it would be cool, but it's just a language barrier for me now. It's I got the family, so, and I really enjoy the Premiership.
Mm.
I think it's the greatest competition I've played in, to be honest.
I think you're right.
It's really tough. The worst team, supposedly, could be the team that's top of the log.
Yeah.
Any team can beat anyone. If you don't turn up, you'll lose.
Yeah, I think you're completely right there. I mean, I'm not saying for a second London Irish and or, say, Worcester are the two worst teams in the Premiership, but they're all bottom of the table. That said, if you go to these clubs, they're both very well set up. Worcester in particular have got really good facilities. I mean, I think they've probably got as good a facilities as anyone in the entire league. And yet here they are, another year struggling at the bottom.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, it just takes one or two wins for the confidence to be back and for them to be out the relegation battle.
Yeah, like they did last year.
Yeah. And talking about London Irish, I mean, they lost to Edinburgh the weekend. They lost quite heavily to us. But they beat Harlequins, and Harlequins beat us.
Yeah.
So it's this competition's really exciting.
Yeah, I think London Irish, they've got good people in place, and they're building. You can tell that they're building for the future. Like, they've got London Irish people in there who've either played for the club or have come through the system. They've got, I hate this word, but they've got a good culture. I think also, like, the input from Brendan Venter can't be underestimated.
Yeah, it's so early to say, but you'd like to think they're building, because it's not nice to see them go down, back down.
I think they might go down, but I think if they do, they'll just come back up stronger. So I don't think it's necessarily one of those things like it's going to be a disaster. It might happen, but they'll still be further on in their progress.
I think it's quite tough, isn't it? Don't you lose like sponsors and things like that? That's the big. I don't really understand it, to be honest. I think it would be nice for them to stay up.
Mm.
Not that I want Worcester or any team to go down. Kind of wish it was just set teams.
Do you think it is quite peculiar actually for northern European sports? But do you think it's odd that we operate relegation promotion, because it doesn't really exist in South Africa. It certainly doesn't exist in the Pro 12, Pro 14.
Yeah, so I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, because at least the fact that it's relegation, you always have to field your strongest teams, because that's obviously always a threat.
Yeah.
Because if you lose and you get relegated, it's going to cost you big time. The flip side, I don't know. It's a tricky one.
It's a tricky one, you know, but if you think about someone like Sale last year, like, say once you know you're not going to make top six or whatever it is, like, maybe there's an argument then that you play the Curry Boys every week, and that you maybe play, you know, some of the academy lads, see what you've got further down the club, let young lads develop and let the old lads rest up for next season.
Yeah, I think you could find pros and cons either way you look at it. I think the great thing about the Premiership is you're battling for top four so you can make the semis.
Mm-hmm.
You're then battling for top six to make Champions Cup. If you're not battling for that, you're battling for seventh to have an opportunity to make the Champions Cup.
Yes.
And if not, you're potentially in a relegation battle. Other than that, there's maybe one or two spots where you're in like a no man's land, you know, where you can then do let's play the academy fellas coming through.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a very small, you know, it's a very small window of opportunity you have to give those lads a go. And I think that's the main problem. Because I reckon a lot of directors of rugby would like to see how good are the kids that they've got coming through.
Yeah, I think the good thing though is the LV Cup though in the A League. I don't know. I think the A League maybe.
I don't know. Have you been down to the A League? Do you watch much of the A League stuff?
Yeah, go watch all the games.
It's just not structured enough, is it? It's just, you know, there's a lot of guys in who are there on invitational. It's very, very fast. I don't know if they get enough high quality rugby to show the coaches what, you know, what they can do.
Yeah, and I think then it's also quite a lot of rugby in a year. So whether they scrap that, I don't know. But there's still the LV yeah. Cup, which would be great for the youngsters to see who's coming through.
Have you got any top tips on who you quite like coming through the Sale Academy at the moment?
It's really tough. The Sale's got a good track record with the Academy, so to be honest, there's a handful of players. I think Aaron Reed showing, you know, a good bit of speed and good footwork.
Is that the winger?
Yeah, he's
blonde, the winger. Blonde fella?
Yes.
I've not seen him play yet, but he's quite noticeable. He stands out.
Yeah, yeah. He looks promising. Brett Sturges, you know, looks promising. They're still young. They're still learning.
Yeah.
But yeah, Aaron Reed was on the bench last week, so if he manages to get on the bench again and get a game, it'll be exciting to see how he goes.
Mm. Oh, I'll give you one. Nick Dolly.
Yes, yeah, he's a good promise. He's good. He's really exciting for the future. Yeah. I think he's got a lot of gains that he's made over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think Sam James's brother's there somewhere. Is it Luke James? Now, if he's as good as Sam, I'm all for giving him some game, time.
He played the cast game in the warm up games away in France, and I thought he went really well.
Mm.
So he's another one. Like I said, there's so many of them. Yeah, you pretty hit the nail, pretty much hit the nail on the head.
Now, how good do you reckon this Sale team is? Because you've been here a couple of years now, and obviously you've seen the improvement from last year to this year. Now, unfortunately, you're not that much further along in terms of table position. So where do you reckon this team can end up? What do you think they're capable of?
It's still early doors. I'd like to think that our goal of making top six, top four is still realistic.
Yeah.
I think when we cross that Exeter game, we can look back, because that's only one game before we get into the LV. See where we are on the table, reassess, and then try and build on that.
Is the group happy with how they've gone so far? And what I mean by that is, yeah, it's been a difficult start. I think four losses, two wins. But are you happy with the performances? Do you see an improvement week on week?
I think our away form has probably disappointed us the most. I think our home performances, bar the Newcastle, where we feel like that was a big slip-up, we put in two great performances Irish and Gloucester. Away from home is where we need our consistency and need to turn up. So that's a big work on for us as a group.
Yeah, I mean, the away form hasn't been great, but these are small work-ons. I mean, a couple of bits of magic from Danny Kerr probably changed the Harlequins game, and Saracens are just, well, they're just Saracens. We saw them against Northampton.
Yeah, to be fair, they did good analysis on us, and they did a good job on the execution on those plays too. So, yeah, I think that Harlequins game was a bit disappointing for us too.
Mm.
I think we really went there with the confidence to go and win the game, so...
Just out of interest, when you do have a system found out like you did against Harlequins, how much of an upheaval is it to change that system? Or does it not matter because you're always changing things for different opponents anyway? Anyway, so it's not really a big deal.
No, I think we have a system in place, and once something gets exposed, it's almost a good thing. Obviously, it's a bad thing in the fact that we lose points and maybe drop a few positions in the league. But at the same time, we learn things. What flaws we have in our defence, what we need to tighten up on, what we need to fix to get better and then perform the next time around. So that was a big learning for us that week after that loss.
Yeah, but I guess that's just part of professional rugby anyhow.
Well, for us, I think like we have our defensive system, but at the same time, we also come in with the mentality that we can still learn and still get better. Our defence can always get better. When you look at the top sides who's winning the leagues, they have the best defence. So, you know, obviously it's not great being exposed and having to make these changes, but at the same time you'd rather make the changes so that later on in the season when you need those big wins, you can back your defence.
Well, Byron, you've been more than generous with your time. Thank you very much. I'm wishing you all the best for the season with Sale Sharks, which I will be watching with keen interest. But more importantly, fingers crossed that you get that call-up with Scotland. You deserve it so far. And if it's any consolation, I would have given you call-up if it was up to me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, one last thing before you go. Is there anywhere that we can find you on Twitter or social media, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on all the social media.
There you have it. Byron McGuigan, social media mogul. Find him, ask him questions, do all the rest of the stuff. Until next week, I will see you then.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.